What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast Special Needs Student Athletic Trainer Aids. This week, I got Tara Davenport, who's been working with Oak Ridge High School and right outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. She's been an athletic trainer for 13 years. And this came out of a question personally because I had a student in a wheelchair who said, hey, I'm interested in being a student athletic trainer. And I said, okay, we need to find out how we can include you and how that works. But then she never came back. And so that got me thinking, you know, how do people deal with this? Because how do you get that wheelchair? You know, the football team can't take a wheelchair bus because they can't fit. So, how do I include this kid without, I guess, logistically? And so Tara said she's got some experience with that. So we're going to get right to that. If you want to look back at the show notes here, some of the resources, some of the comments from other people on social media, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/special needs. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/special needs. And then Tara, why don't you get us started with what's your AT story? How did you get to where you are right now?
Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me. So as you said, I've been an AT for 13 years. I got my start at UT Martin, which is a Division I school out in West Tennessee, very close to the Mississippi River. And I was an undergrad there, grad school, and that was actually my first full-time job. They hired me right out of grad school. And that was a great experience for me. I think the thing that stuck with me most from UT Martin is the undergraduate curriculum program. Unfortunately, that program's not there anymore. It's one of the ones that didn't make it through the transition. But I host, you know, as a member of that program, as a preceptor, as an instructor in that program, I got a great foundation going forward in my profession, in my career. From UT Martin, went to a place called Maryville College here in East Tennessee. It's a Division III school. I was there for about 3.5 years. It's a liberal arts institution. And so one of the great things we did there is we had a work study program to get kids working in the athletic training facility. And last count, we had 8 students from a 3-year period that are either in PT school, finished with PT school, or certified athletic trainers. We actually had 2 pass the exam in February. And from there, that led me to Oak Ridge High School. I've been there for about 7 years now. The unique thing about Oak Ridge, we're one of the few high schools in East Tennessee. I'm employed straight through the high school. I don't work through an outreach clinic. Have my own facility on campus and really have a lot of freedom to kind of build my program as I see fit. The thing that's kind of brought me here with you today is I think I'm kind of like the rest of your listeners or viewers, is that I have a hard time, well, maybe not everyone. I personally have a hard time finding students and where they fit in my program, student aides. This year, I was fortunate enough to work with a young man who is autistic, and it's really changed my perspective about how I relate to students and just how I do my job on a daily basis.
All right. So that being said there, so we've had high numbers in the past. We've had low numbers recently, you know, as far as like 7 or 12 kids. And like I said, I personally have never had one that has required special accommodations, attention, need. And tell me, what are you doing to work with that kid with autism?
Well, the first thing we did, I sat down with his parents, his counselor, which we have a fantastic counseling department at Oak Ridge. at Oak Ridge. We're kind of lucky in that department. And then his special ed coordinator, who coordinates his education program. And we talked about what he's capable of, where he would fit in with us, what he could handle and what he couldn't, as far as the nature of our schedule, the nature of what we do. You know, he works with football. Football coaches are not the nicest people in the whole world. Football changes direction on a dime, you know, and you have to roll with that. And if that wasn't something he was comfortable with or could adapt to, then this situation really wouldn't work. His parents were all for it. His special education coordinator, you know, thought that it would be a great idea. And then his counselor really offered to come out to practice with me to help me get a footing. So we jumped right in with spring football, and he took right to it. I think the biggest challenge, the biggest adaptation that we had to work with was actually my communication skills. And I think I'm guilty of this with anyone, whether it's a special needs aide or a football player or whomever. You know, I think I kind of expect people to read my mind. And so really on my part, communication, whether it's telling him once, twice, two, three, four times what the task is or what the schedule is, I've really had to focus on that. He's an excellent worker. We kind of reached early on what his ceiling would be. If I have setup duty that needs to be completed, whether it's practice or a game, he's all over that. If it's decisions that I make on the fly that kind of affect how things are going, that's probably a task or a duty that we're going to assign to someone else. But for the most part, it wasn't him adapting to us. It was us adapting to him. And after that, it really went smoothly, went really well.
All right, so for this kid who's dealing with autism, you met with the parents, you met with the student, you met with the counselor. The counselor actually came out and helped kind of in the transition. To talk a little bit more about that conversation between you and the counselor while you're there at practice. Was the counselor out there saying, hey, these are some of the things you need to look for, or hey, I don't think that these, this, this, and this are a good fit for him? Talk a little bit more about that.
So our first couple of days, we really didn't hold back. We treated this student kind of like we treat all of our students. There's a list of daily duties. Those duties need to be done. We go out to practice. You're assigned a position group. My students at practice, mostly the water crew, and they do a fantastic job. So we assigned him to our lineman, offensive lineman. That coach happened to have the student in practice. And so our counselor was really just kind of on site in case a situation came up that I couldn't deal with, like an emotional, not really breakdown, but an emotional reaction to stimuli, overstimulus or something like that. And then at the end of the day, she and I would sit down and say, okay, this is what he did well. This is what he didn't do well. This is what we think in the future we can have him do. She never put limitations on before we tried something. And that's something I really respected, because if you're going to give a kid a chance, you don't really want to go into it with preconceived notions or preconceived limitations. And so it was a little bit of trial by fire, but with my first time students, that trial by fire is never going to be super risky. And so we just took it one day at a time, and he met expectations as all new students would. And then when we got to the point where we're like, you know, this is probably something he's not going to be comfortable with, like, basic taping, or when we start to teach about wound care, things like that. Those were situations where, you know, we said, okay, you're doing a great job, but this is probably a job that you're not going to participate in. And he was fine with that, because he really enjoyed his interaction with the players. He enjoyed the satisfaction of the jobs he did well. So that was kind of easy for me. There will be situations, there will be students where it's not that easy, and you will have to deal with limitations or situations that your students aren't comfortable with. And again, that comes back to you as their supervisor, as their preceptor, recognizing limitations, recognizing situations that they may not be comfortable in or that may have triggers for them in the case of autism.
All right. So let me get your thoughts and opinion on my situation where I had a student who was in a wheelchair, like wheelchair bound, you know, it's not like optional wheelchair, and helping in athletic training. So the student's sibling played sports here. And so she was kind of here all the time anyways, waiting for her mom to pick up both of them. But like I said, she never came back. So what do I need to think through? What are the things that I need to plan for?
With your situation with the wheelchair, I think that, that's a situation that there should be things in place for that type of disability in a public high school. I assume you're at a public high school.
Yes.
But that doesn't always translate to what we do and what we do with athletics. And so, you know, I think first and foremost, is it safe for her to be, you know, on the sideline? Is it safe for her to be at practice in that, you know, with my facility, our practice field, there's no good way to get to it. There's a lot of stairs to get to. And so, you know, there are, we make every effort to make what we do accessible to all children, all students, but sometimes that's just not possible. Thinking ahead, you know, what is your facility like? Is it accessible? Are there, you know, my cooler, we store our coolers about 6.5-7 feet off the ground, just because that's where we have areas for racks, for drying racks. Would she be able to help in your setup procedure just by the way your facility is set up? Are there tasks that she can perform? Are there ways that you can get her involved in spite of her wheelchair? The second is she going to require more focus than the task that you're there to perform? And that was one of my big concerns, is am I going to be more focused on this student and his needs than what I'm here to do, which is provide care for these 120 athletes? And so, you know, I think that's a major point that you have to consider at the end of the day, is that no matter if it's a student with special needs, whether it's autism or a wheelchair or a prosthetic or anything like that, is at the end of the day, does that student require more effort and focus than what we're here to do? And I think when you get into a situation like that, it's okay to say, you know, maybe this isn't the right fit for you. But in your situation, especially with a wheelchair, I think it all comes down to accessibility. And at the end of the day, we want our facilities to be accessible, but it's not always the case, and it's not something we can change readily. I don't know in my situation, if we had a student in a wheelchair who was interested in coming out, I really don't know that it would work just because of the accessibility factor. You know, looking ahead, if you're in that situation in the future, though, you know, that's something you kind of, if someone asked me, would I take another student with autism? I would say yes. If someone asked you, would you take another student in a wheelchair? You know, you have to kind of sit down and look at your situation and make that decision based off your criteria of what you expect from a student aid.
Well, I've definitely got a lot of other talking points or things to think through, you know, and honestly, I'd never thought about, will this student require more attention than the rest of my job? And that is a very important thing, because I'm here, I'm paid as an athletic trainer to prevent injury, not to, I guess, honestly, add to the risk of injury. So it's definitely one of the things I need to look at, think through, and have those conversations with the parents, the student, the counselors, and then go from there. So,
yeah, I mean, that was one of my first concerns, is, you know, am I going to be spending more time making sure he's on task, safe, adapting well, than I am doing my job? And, you know, there is nothing like Friday night football. It's a different environment. It's a different emotion. It's a different feel. And we couldn't replicate that in practice. So his first football game was, you know, I was just hoping everything went smoothly, because we didn't know what was going to happen. Luckily, it went well. He made it through the whole season. He's one of my best students. But you can't, you know, you can't put a student aid's needs ahead of the job you're there to do in the first place.
Gotcha. And so in that situation, you know, I think Sarah Balk on Facebook and Craig Lewin said he had an autistic child, and you need to know their triggers. And so Obviously a Friday night football game is going to be loud. There's going to be the band. There's going to be cheering. There's going to be excitement. It's going to be late. And so I think Rick Redden said something about he had a guy that, at 9 o'clock, that's all he would talk about was, coach, I got to go to bed. It's 9 o'clock. I got to get rest. I got to get rest. I got to go to bed. I got to get rest. And, you know, if that's their trigger, then they need to work things like sub-varsity football that starts at 4 and ends at 7 and those kind of things there. So what are some of those other triggers that you guys have worked around?
Definitely the schedule trigger. That was a big one for us to get over. And that was something I was more involved with his parents with than with him. In an effort to give him a sense of well-roundedness, my student was a Boy Scout, and he was involved in church, and he was involved in another activity. I can't remember off the top of my head. He was a student aide for us, and he liked to be in bed at a specific time, and so his schedule was a big trigger for him. So we just worked really closely with his parents to be like, okay, you know, Friday is an away game. It's about 2 hours away. This is what time we're leaving. This is what time we'll get home. Is that going to be an issue? And if it was well beyond his normal schedule, then, you know, his parents would make the decision, okay, he doesn't need to go with you guys. We'll just keep him at home. Noise was another trigger. He was very sensitive to loud noise, but did well with earplugs. But we just had to make certain that, you know, he knew, hey, you know, I need to be making eye contact with either the other student aide. I was lucky enough to have a certified intern this year who's really great about working with them. Check in with me, you know, just being really engaged. If you can't hear, you know, he's got to have earplugs in to offset the band, but he just needs to be engaged, making sure that he's checking in with us, which is what we want all of our student aides to do. We want them to be engaged. And then finally, he was very food sensitive, if that makes any sense. And so we do a really great job of treating our student aides like they're one of the team. They eat, you know, Thursday night meal with our football team, pregame, postgame. But my guy, he would only eat chicken and he would only eat fried chicken, which is not on our football menu very often. And so, you know, you're not, Fridays are long days, and I can't be worried that you're not prepared to hang out with us for the next 7 hours during a football game. And so, you know, I started keeping PB&J in my desk. His mom would bring him lunch by. His mom would bring him a snack at halftime. And it sounds silly, but it's one of those things, you know, having a student aide that you have to worry about didn't eat all day or didn't eat because they didn't like the food, to the degree that it was a trigger for him. If you asked him to eat something besides fried chicken, he had a real problem with it. And so that wasn't something I wanted to deal with, but his parents were great about helping us out with that situation. That's an example of triggers are not all the same, and triggers may seem insignificant to you or I, but that's why they're called triggers, is they have a very deep emotional response with these individuals. And so if it were me and I didn't like what they had to eat, I just, you know, it just roll off my back. But unfortunately, not everyone's made like that. And with the schedule and things like that, you and I can sometimes let those things go and cope beyond that. And these kids really can't. And so you have to be cognizant of that. You can't just brush it off as silly or insignificant.
Yeah, I have three kids, and it's amazing to me, like, how easily I can get frustrated with them not being able to control their emotions. But I'm like, I am almost 37 years old, and there's times where I get upset with them or can't control my emotions with them. I'm 37 and they're 7, 5, and 3 and can't control their emotions, you know? I think those kind of things help me think, okay, look, it's not that he's trying to disobey. He's not trying to misbehave. He just hasn't learned how to completely deal with that yet. And like you said in the beginning, it's really you adapting to him, you know, learning to communicate things that way. Okay, son, I need you to do this and this, and then come back and I'll give you your next set of instructions. Because if I gave him all four things, he wasn't going to do any of them. Right. And so it's just learning to adapt to those needs.
100% correct. I'm notorious for, as soon as my kids are assembled, I'm rattling off instructions, and I just expect you to catch them all, expect them to all get done. And not everybody operates that way. And so now we've brought out the big white dry erase board. There's a list of instructions every day. you know, we've gone so far as to color code it so that, my special needs guy knows he's blue and the blue stuff is what he's supposed to complete. And he loves that because he gets to go to the board and cross it off. And that's a visual that he did something to completion. He did a good job. You know, my football players who come through to get taped or pre-treatment or whatever, you know, they know that his color's blue and he gets a high, you know, hey, you finished your setup for today. High five. And, you know, honestly, on a different note, that's what really surprised me and impressed me the most. My football players just adopted this guy, which may not be the right term, but they love him. He's one of the guys. They go to off-campus lunch with him on Fridays. You know, he's been at all of our varsity basketball games with our football team. Like, they've just really taken to him and made him feel really good, which may be a better experience and a better emotion for him than having worked for me.
Yeah, just the sense of the belonging. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Every time I see one of those videos of, you know, the special needs manager being able to make that basket in the game,
yes.
It just,
yes, it gets to me.
Yeah. So, all right. Do you have anything else other specific that you would like to say, hey, this is one thing we need to think about. There's one thing you need to work on, look at. If not, then I'm going to kind of work through some of these other comments that we received about different special needs situations. And then we can just kind of talk through those.
Yeah. I think the bottom line for me, I was kind of hesitant taking on a special needs student aide. But at the end of the day, you got to be open-minded about it and know that it's okay to say no, that not every student is going to fit into your situation or you're not going to be able to adapt to their situation. But, you know, take a chance. I had a great experience. We're going to have him back next year. He'll be senior next year. And so I'm really excited for that opportunity. But just know that keep an open mind and it's okay to say no sometimes.
All right. That's definitely, yep. It's also one of the cool things you said about the counselor, just saying, you know what, I'm not going to put any limits on it. We're just going to throw him out there and see what he can do and then peel back from there. And so
it's
kind of the same attitude, I guess, you've adapted there is, you know, just go for it. And if it doesn't work, then say, okay, it didn't work, but we tried.
So, yeah, just give it a shot. You never know.
All right. So on Facebook, Megan Wilkins said she had a student with lack of motion in one arm, a great student, hard worker, but ended up quitting because she couldn't learn how to tape. And so I think like that, if you have other tasks that, I mean, maybe the kid just felt like she wasn't progressing and wasn't able to do it fully. So she wanted to go on and do some other things. But again, like you said, having a task board saying, okay, these are your things to do and we just make it work, or just saying, all right, well, try everything and whatever you think you're best at, we'll have you do those.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everybody gets tired of water setup every day if that's the only thing you get to do, but just try something until it sticks. And, you know, taping's hard. I didn't feel like I got really good at it until, you know, I was in grad school. And not everybody picks it up quickly. And so, you know, I don't know that specific situation, but, you know, try a little bit of everything and see what sticks.
Yeah. And then, like you said, it's okay for this to say, okay, well, if this doesn't work for you, you know, that's fine.
Absolutely.
All right. So Sarah Balk says that she had some with developmental delays, including Down syndrome. And so that's a whole different set of concerns, because she said some of them, you know, they'd have to check and make sure that they're not getting too hot or too cold, because that can really affect the...
You know, their body processes, individuals with Down syndrome, their body processes are so different than ours, and that can really present a problem. And as well as what is their level of development, because the Down syndrome spectrum is as wide as the autism spectrum. So, you know, again, I think that's one of those situations where we can't be afraid to say no. We can't make everyone fit. We can't make a spot for everyone. Our basketball team, their manager has Down syndrome, and that's worked out really well. He only comes to home games. He's, you know, essentially the water boy, which is a horrible term. I hate that term, but I don't really – I use it all the time. And so football and soccer and outdoor sports may not be for everybody, but if you have the ability to incorporate them in some of your indoor sports, maybe give that a shot.
Yeah, those – again, one of the things you talked about, the accessibility, can they get there? You know, can they work just home basketball games because then they're inside? But then another one of the things that I think you might have mentioned the noise from the band. Well, you have the yeah. buzzer there in the gym, and if they're not expecting that, you know, is that going to cause a problem? And they're sitting close to the court, so is it going to focus more of your attention?
And that's true. And you know, it, like with football and basketball, especially if you're on the sideline, like you got to be aware. Like, you know, the athletic trainer for Alabama got trucked by a tailback this year and broke his arm and his ribs, and so it's a, you have to have your head on a swivel. And it's hard. Sometimes it's hard enough to be responsible for me, much less someone else who needs extra oversight. So I think that kind of comes back to assessing your situation and their situation. The risk factor of, can I do my job and have this person on the sideline with me?
All right. Sarah also said she had a kiddo with CRPS, which really limited her in football to a scooter or wheelchair. And then so a lot of times she would hang out inside and help with treatments that were going on during practice. And again, that goes back to knowing the triggers, going, finding out what they can do, speaking with the parents, the counselors, and if, you know, if necessary, the doctor involved with treating the student, and then giving them a shot and going from there.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're open to it, I think you can, in most cases, find a spot for a kid to fit in. You just have to keep an open mind about it.
And I think you mentioned, you know, that your student is doing really well out there. We're a hard worker. That's one of the things Sarah says, that one of the kids has a learning disability and struggles in the regular classroom, but there in the athletic training facility, he does really well because he's got the one-on-one instruction, the practical, like hands-on skills. So he's not just sitting there having to read a book, but he's got Sarah there saying, okay, well, here, do it this way, you know, standing right behind him, or even another student athletic trainer aid saying, yeah, here, help me do this, or here's how I do it, or that kind of thing. So you get really close one-on-one instruction, which can be good for students who are struggling with learning disabilities.
You know, and I think that's something I failed to mention is my other student aides that were as open-minded as they could be and did take the opportunity to say, hey, come help me, or hey, let me show you what I'm doing, or let me help you. And, you know, I have two others, but they were huge. You know, they were probably as involved as anybody else in making sure this situation worked. And you know, that's a great comfort to have if you have other student aides, whether they're special needs or not. Just, you know, you guys are a team. You have one goal, whether it's practice day or game day, and everybody needs to be involved.
And then one of Sarah's kids, she said, if this kid gets tired, then he's going to sit down and not help at all. And basically that's it. That's all he's doing, right? So there's no point in like yelling at him or getting on to him. You know that that's one of his triggers. So you know that if he's tired, he's done. He's going to sit there and not do anything. And again, you just kind of plan for that. And
we do. When they're done, they're done. And there's no amount of motivation to change that, you know. And so if at halftime of a football game we're super busy and we're a couple hands short, we just got to make do with it because, you know, my guy's taking a break. His feet are tired. He's tired. He's getting his halftime hot dog every Friday night, halftime hot dog, throwing the bun away. And that's just how it is, you know. And so once I figured it out, you know, I wasn't like – scurrying around looking for him, worried about him. It was okay. You know, we kind of adjusted and made do, but it's one of those things where you can't think that you're going to rationalize with them like you would other people. They're unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know, their brain's just not wired that way. And so, you know, it's one of those things like I could get mad about it and I could make it a sticking point, or I could just go on about it because it really didn't slow us down that much.
Yeah, and so one of the final things there, Sarah said she tries to hold them to the same expectations as far as the schedule, what they wear, what they're supposed to be working, what they're learning. So she, instead of trying to make, you know, okay, well, everybody does this except this kid, well, for the most of the time, they've always been that exception. They've always been that outcast type. And so, you know, hold them to the same standards and then, you know, maybe just personally, you give them more grace or more opportunities to fail than you would a student who's normal functioning.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You know, the standard, the schedule standard, what we wore, those standards did not change, because those are standards that, I mean, really, it wasn't a hard thing for my guy to adhere to. He was tickled to death to get the athletic training shirt this year. I think he wore it to, like, he wore it to school on non-game days, which was fantastic. I loved it. But as far as, like, tasks and things, I think that's where it helped for us to ride it out, because it didn't look like we were excluding him or separating him or giving him other tasks. Everybody was included in the same list. And so the standard didn't change, just the task did.
Very good. Erica Williamson had, said she had a student with Fragile X syndrome, and they was able to participate, but they weren't able to be part of football because of the, or contact sports. And, but he said he loves being around the athletes and helping at practices. And he also knows everyone's name, jersey number, and how many points they've scored and that kind of stuff. So I'm sure the kids enjoy that. Hey, you know, hey, Johnny, how many points do I got? Hey, how many points does he have? Who's winning? That kind of thing. Or,
oh yeah.
And so he's always a positive person to be around. And Chris Trobaugh mentioned something like that. Some of the special ed students that he's had in his program have been some of the most thoughtful kids that he's dealt with as an athletic trainer. And so, you know, I mean, we've gone through several. There's autism, there's wheelchair, there's Fragile X, there's Down syndrome, CRPS. So we've gone through quite a few so far, as far as people who have been included in these sports medicine programs. I know that in our district, there have been some, I hope this is correct, little people as athletic trainers as well. And so, you know, there's some special considerations that have to be made for things like that. But I know I've seen it multiple times when we go to our GHATs that there are some little people included in athletic training, and, you know, it's worked for them. And so that's definitely another option.
You know, speaking of districts, in our district, not necessarily student aides, but we have several special needs, CP, MS, wheelchair bound, that are statisticians. And I think that's becoming bigger in Tennessee, is statting high school sports. I mean, like stat crew type stats. And so one of our district high schools, you know, that's their statistician club is made of mostly special needs students who do a fantastic job. I mean, they, you know, they physically may not, they may be physically limited, but mentally they're super sharp. And so that's really benefited that school. Yeah. And, you know, that's something to keep in mind is, you know, if a student can't help you, they may fit in with your stat program.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, like we were talking about earlier, the guy that knew everybody's jersey number, everybody's stats. If he already knows that in his head, we'll just have him write it down or record it or type it in on an iPad. And, you know, then boom, that's one less step you have to do. Or go back and watch the game film because it's already done.
Absolutely.
And then I think this is the last one I have here. Matt Weishun said he had a student with autism for 4 years, so working through the whole program. He never figured out how to tape ankles, but he could manage wrists and do basic first aid stuff. And then he was a hard worker. He knew the setup and takedown routines. And if he got distracted, it was easy to cue him. One of the other things that Sarah said, and I think you mentioned as well, is you had a specific coach assigned to some of these students so that they knew how to deal with them. And also that student becomes comfortable, and that's part of their routine is, you know, I work with this group, I know them. They're least likely to, you know, fly all over the field. The linemen, they're not moving as fast and as far. And so it gives that guy a little bit safer area to be in. And again, Matt's student as well had problems with the being in the gym because of the loud noises. And so he, you know, the kids would either warn him to cover his ears, or he would, if it was one of those days where he was just not doing well, he would just, you know, step out or something like that. But again, communicating with the parents was key. So, I'm pretty much,
you know, I think we all came from situations, whether we were curriculum students or internship students or GAs or whatever, we were held to a standard where, you know, you're there the duration, your needs are probably, you know, if you're working football, your individual needs come second to the task we're trying to accomplish. And when you work with high school students, and especially special needs high school students, that is not the reality. If they need to take a break, if they need to, if their task needs to be different, if they're sensitive to noise and things like that, you know, that's their real world. That's their everyday. And so you know, I was very accepting of that. My guy does a great job. If I have to make a couple of exceptions for him, we're going to do it because it's worth more. The experience to him is priceless. The help for me, you know, was great. And so I think we all kind of come from a background where we're not used to making exceptions like that. You know, especially when I was in my curriculum, you know, my clinical site was not negotiable. If you weren't on time, you know, you were in the doghouse for the day. And if you didn't complete the task, you were in the doghouse. And I think as certified athletic trainers who run our own programs, it's okay to make exceptions and kind of bend. And you know, at the end of the day, the benefit was to both parties. Even if he had to take a break at halftime or, you know, he had a situation that we had to kind of take a break for or make an exception for, it was okay. And I think that's something to remember.
Yeah, I love what I've learned here. Include the counselor, include the parent, the student. Give them a shot rather than holding them back and saying, like, adding one thing. Just, okay, well, let's go see what you can do. And then what you can't do, we'll kind of eliminate that from your routine. You know, we obviously, you don't want to throw a kid that has heat issues out there in August and say, see what you can do here in Houston, Texas. But you do want to say, okay, well, mom, dad, maybe you want to be here for the first week of practice and stand off to the side and let's just see what he can do. You know, watch your kid and know whatever that is. But I really like the tips, the ways to get started, to get things moving. And again, if as a listener, if you've got a kid, honestly, I want to hear a little bit more about the physical inability. So kids that require the crutches with, you know, like multiple sclerosis, cystic fibrosis, or in a wheelchair, or other special like physical inabilities that would require like modified transportation or things like that, then I would like to hear from you. So you can email me, you can hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, something like that. And then maybe we can include that like in a second conversation as we continue to learn. Tara, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what do you think is going to be the best way to do that?
You should email me if you have questions, concerns, if something came up you want to know more about, or you just generally liked what I had to say. You can email me at tmdavenport, tmdavenport@ortn.edu. tmdavenport.
Okay. So tmdavenport@ortn.edu. So maybe you liked or didn't like what she said and you feel that, you know, she needs to correct something, or she was very beneficial in improving your case to include everyone and provide compassionate care for everyone, then email her, let me know. And I'd like to continue this conversation as I continue to grow who I am as an athletic trainer. And as we continue again to provide compassionate care, including other people in our program, because you really never know who's going to be the best, the hardest worker, the most influential student until you give them that shot. So I'll have the link to that email in sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/special needs. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/special needs. Tara, one last thing. Right now it's March, which is National Athletic Training Month 2018. I want you to give a shout out to somebody, an athletic trainer who's really influenced you, and do that right here.
My shout out is to Tina Cole, who is my mentor. She was my preceptor through the majority of my program at UT Martin and continues to be a sounding board to this day. I could call her right now with a question and she would answer it to the best of her ability. She's always had my back. And so, Tina Cole, I hope you have a great athletic training month.
All right. Well, thank you, Tina Cole, for mentoring, for being a positive role model and setting the standard for Tara. And again, that Tara's been able to positively impact the area around her because of the way that you impacted her. So thank you, Tina. And for if you're listening during National Athletic Training Month, awesome. Celebrate somehow. If you're listening outside of National Athletic Training Month, which is March, plan to do some advocating for a profession today. Do it tomorrow. Speak well, write a letter, send a thank you note. Thank a mentor, a doctor, somebody else who's positively influenced you, a teacher, and just say, hey, I'm an athletic trainer. Whenever you taught me anatomy in high school, that was my favorite class, and it really sparked my interest and that kind of thing. So write a note, encourage somebody, but advocate somehow as we celebrate National Athletic Training Month. So again, for Jeremy, Tara Davenport, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/special needs, that is a wrap.